Hi, this is Drew, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Hopefully, you've been enjoying our show for a while now, but if you're a brand new listener, then the next 50 seconds are not for you, so just go ahead and fast forward a bit. I just wanted to ask our longtime listeners to consider becoming patrons of The Drew Marshall Show, because by throwing us just a few bucks each month, you'll be helping what many tell us is the most brutally authentic spiritual show they've ever heard stay on the air. Look, as loyal podcast listeners, you've been getting the same programming our radio listeners have been hearing live Saturdays 1 to 5 for the last 16 years. Except you get to hear everything commercial-free, you smart consumer, you. Well, because of a brand new arrangement with our studio, our expenses have now gone through the roof. And to be brutally honest, we could use the help to cover those costs. So just before you go to bed tonight, maybe you could stop by our website and click on the giant click here to become a patron sign. And if a whole bunch of you were able to scrounge up like $4 per month, then individually your $4 would have just made a massive difference in helping us cover what it costs to bring you the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, that's it. Sorry to bug you. Now on with the show. I hope you have a good sleep tonight after you become a patron. Sometimes jokes have, like, the A to B is such a long distance that the C is not worth it.
You know how long
it took to get to the word dentist in that song?
Yeah, and our guest looks a little confused, too, so maybe it didn't pay off the way I wanted it to.
Yeah. What was the thing that I maybe suggested, Tim?
You said doctor, yeah. Give me the news.
Yeah.
We're going out with King of Pain by Police, so maybe that'll go over well.
Folks, you are listening to The Drew Marshall Show. Thank you for tuning in. We just had a great hour there with Max Marshall, brilliant musician. And the first hour of every show we dedicated to live music, live performance.
You know, I got to say, all the years I've been here, like, it just keeps getting better.
Oh, thank
like,
you, Tim.
No, like, seriously, it's you know, I don't need to give you a compliment.
Don't. Stop.
That's the consistency thing that's pretty amazing is we don't get many...
Duds?
No, not at all.
I'm trying to remember the last dud we had, musician.
Let's name them.
Yeah, it was you.
Tim Miller. Well, at least the dog liked me.
Yes, my dog. Tim came in with his guitar, sang a song, and my dog howled in the studio.
It was awesome.
You couldn't ask for better radio.
He was in tune. Nice harmonies.
Larry Worthen is the executive director of Christian Medical and Dental Society. And he, he's been the executive director of the Christian Medical Dental Society of Canada since 2012. That would presume that there's one in the United States of America. Is that right?
Actually, there's 80, Drew, all over the world.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. We're one of 80 international national organizations.
Now, prior to that, Larry served in a variety of leadership roles in the not-for-profit sector and in Nova Scotia. The entire province is not-for-profit. Just kidding.
Drew.
Just kidding.
Come on.
Who does that?
There goes that province listening to us.
Yeah, all six of them. Larry has a BA and a law degree from Dalhousie. Wow, good for you, man. And a master's in theology as well?
Absolutely.
Boy, you did a lot of studying, eh?
I sure did.
And you got a woman in your life, and she's a doctor.
Absolutely, yep.
But what's she a doctor of?
She's
like a family MD.
Family doctor, yeah.
Is it true that family doctors are really just sort of the hub of communication these days? They don't really, they're just spinning out scripts and sending you somewhere else?
Well, it's important. They're the first point of contact, so they provide a lot of support and care as well.
Yeah, okay. All right.
But you're right. They are like the hub of the tire, of the spoke.
Yeah. Well, listen, you're here today because we're going to chat about this question. Are doctors really being forced to perform duties that go against their beliefs, right? That's pretty much the straight-up question. I read an article in National Post, I believe.
Yeah.
I talked about this, mentioned your organization. I thought, okay, hold on a second. So I started reading and looking into it a little more. So we've got to talk about this on the show. So also joining us, all the way from London, England, is Dr. Ramona Coelho. Dr. Coelho, what kind of accent do you have?
Well, I'm from very boring London, Ontario.
Oh, that's boring.
All right, okay.
Okay, but no offense to my London people.
Yeah, we just lost everyone in London as well. Thank you very much.
Do we have anybody?
No, no one in London.
So we're all right.
They don't have technology there. Can I just say that London, as far as I'm concerned, is the worst traffic city in Ontario, at least. Whoever planned that city
Ellis Dawn.
I know they did.
It wasn't Ramona, I can tell you that.
Oh,
no.
My friend, no. I disagree. I'm from Montreal.
Oh, that's
amazing here.
So Montreal is worser?
Oh, Montreal is terrible.
It's Treswurzer.
Treswurzer. That's good, Timmy. That's good. Okay, by the way, may I call you Ramona?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Okay, I figured you'd be cool with that, but I thought I'd ask anyway. Ramona, are you one of those family doctors, or are you a specialist in some
field? I'm a family doctor.
Okay. But you do specialize in things that are, I don't know, kind of heartbeat stuff. Like, and when I mean heartbeat, I don't mean medical. I shouldn't have said that with you guys here. But
No. I would say that just because of my expertise, I did a little bit extra training in palliative care at McGill. Mm-hmm. And then when I started practicing there, I was doing home care with shut-ins and people who had severe disabilities or mental health issues. So when I moved to London, I didn't set up my practice that way, but I just tend to take care of marginalized people.
Yeah. But why? Why do you do that?
Oh, I'm very happy doing that. I believe, like, it's my calling to do that. Like, that's a complicated question, like what we're called to do, but it's it seems to be my mission. Let's say that. Okay. I feel like it's a true mission-based kind of work.
You know, I just read an article recently that talked about, and I want to get them on the show too. There's a group, I think, here in Toronto that works with street people and helps them die with dignity, basically, as opposed to dying in a cardboard box somewhere. You know, they're this palliative street team. And as a matter of fact, I think we had one of those guys on the show a while ago. I love that. Just love it. So anyway, all of that is to say you're awesome and you're a better human being than I am, Dr. Ramona. That's not hard to do, by the way. So Ramona, you know, let's get stuck into this topic, right? So the main topic is, are doctors really being forced to perform duties that go against their beliefs? Have you ever been forced to do something that goes against your belief?
So have I been forced to, and am I actually doing it, are different questions. The College of our College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario has a human rights policy that they created for all issues, but specifically for medical aid in dying, for euthanasia, saying that if we consciously object to something, that we will create a pathway regardless for that patient to have that service. That's called an effective referral. So to put somebody directly on that path to the person who will continue creating that service for them.
Right.
Before that policy, if someone came to see me and we disagreed ethically about the good of whatever was in question, I could just say, you know what, I don't think this is in your best interest, but you can feel free to see another walk-in doctor. You can go to telehealth. There are other places that can give you information. But I don't offer that service. I could talk about that service, but I don't offer that service.
Right, right. Okay, so let's be specific. Someone comes to you, and by the way, I'm assuming the role you're playing in this conversation is a doctor who has some sort of a faith background. Is that right?
Yes, I'm Christian.
Okay. And of course, that can mean very different things to very different people.
Yes.
There are some Christians who maybe come under the Catholic banner, and maybe, I don't know, have you ever heard of a Catholic doctor who refuses to provide birth control?
Yes, I have heard of that.
Okay. And then, of course, I'm trying to think of all the topics that people might be freaked out about. Abortion, birth control, assisted dying, that's the one that really is at the top of the list these days. Would that be fair? The MAID, medical assisted assistance in dying?
Yeah, I will be honest. I'm a Catholic doctor, so some of the things you've mentioned might be issues for me. But I think that for the most part, what people are talking about these days is medical aid in dying. In terms of seeking other services at the hospital, there's the reason that they changed this human rights policy now is because of euthanasia. All these other services are easily accessed anyways. Not that I'm saying medical aid in dying is not, mm-hmm. but this policy was made and the timing was for euthanasia. Because they anticipated that not just a few doctors, but many doctors would be uncomfortable, as it was illegal a few years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you were in medical school, and by the way, Larry, we're going to come around to you in a second, but I'm more excited about the doctor here.
I know.
Is that okay?
That's okay.
Okay. Larry's just gone out for lunch now. Ramona, when you were in medical school and you pledged the oath, right? Everyone goes back to the oath to care for someone who is coming to you for help. And you would have known at the time, because they certainly would have talked about it, that you, every doctor will, of course, face things that maybe aren't kosher with whatever faith or morality trajectory your life is on, right?
Absolutely. I don't know if it's time to clarify that now, but a lot of people don't understand the Hippocratic Oath. And since you mentioned it, the Hippocratic Oath is a life-affirming oath. If you actually look up the actual oath, it actually says, I will not administer a poison to kill. So actually, this whole law is turning the Hippocratic Oath on its head. And everybody else is actually breaking. Not that I'm pointing fingers, but really, the Hippocratic Oath was made in a time, like eons ago, when there was this idea that you could take life if you wanted to, and it was a life-affirming oath. So actually, I'm standing by that oath by not participating in euthanasia.
So does that also mean that you will not participate in the removal of life support?
No, that's totally different, Drew. I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because a lot of people get very defensive, and they think I'm trying to make people live as long as possible with as many external and artificial means as possible. But you know, when someone is dying, there is no need, like I'm talking about acutely dying, there is no need to feed them, okay? You're going to make them uncomfortable. If someone's dying, taking them to the ICU and putting them on life support is most likely not going to work anyways. And withdrawing life support, which is always extraordinary, it's not killing somebody to withdraw life support. I'm talking about giving someone a lethal injection to die, to kill them when they weren't actually dying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What else have people brought up when it comes to pushing back on what you think and believe? What are the other sides to this conversation that you've heard?
Well, it's very interesting because I feel like with my patients, we understand each other. They know me enough to know that I really care about their good. Before I take them on, I say, hey, look, I'm a little bit of a weirdo, or I have a different worldview I want you to know.
Hold on, that's your first consultation is, hi.
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Ramona, and I'm a little bit of a weirdo.
Dr. Weirdo.
Yeah, exactly. No, well, I have a different worldview than most people, and I want you to know.
Okay.
And I explain that to them, and I make sure that they're comfortable before they agree to be my patient. I say, look, I'll never obstruct you. You can get those services elsewhere.
Yeah.
I'm not denying you those services. But I want you to know up front, I can always talk about these things, but these things I don't do. Mm-hmm. And so my patients have been really wonderful. I would say when I started practicing in 2004 in Montreal, I was a little bit worried, right? Like, what would people think of me? I'm very different. But it has never been an issue with my patients. This became more of an issue when the college started speaking about us. Like, I'm sure you've heard, like, there have been lots of stories about, I don't know, us being labeled as obstructors, as people who don't want patient access. When the truth is, patients don't need us to access these services. This is kind of like a false dichotomy that's been created here.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that they need us to create to have these services. And we're even willing to tell them that it's legal, what the service is, that they could call telehealth.
Yeah, you know, I spoke to a doctor the other day and they said telehealth is useless. What do you think?
I think that's not true. So I've been very involved in different... I think Larry should take over the conversation soon because he's really the expert in all the legalities. But, you know, for fun, I call telehealth. I've spoken to the head of telehealth. So I think your doctor is misinformed.
Can I suggest that
you pretended to be a patient and called telehealth?
Yeah. No, I was going to say, if you just called telehealth for fun, you need to get out more. I mean, that's just not a...
Dr. Weirdo calling.
I have a newborn. You know, I'm sitting in my car outside my house that my newborn is not grabbing.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. We have had some people do the interview inside a trunk, but
from a set of bathrooms.
No, luckily, just in a car in the front seat.
That was a conversation about the mafia, though. So.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so what are the list of things that you can't do or that your faith won't allow you to do?
Oh, well, that's very interesting. I'm not even sure if I have a running list, Drew.
Well, how about birth control, because you're Catholic?
Yeah, I don't prescribe birth control. My patients all know that before okay. they become my patient.
Okay, obviously abortion is out. Assisted dying is out. What about if somebody came to you and said they were interested in a sex change operation?
As it stands right now, that is a self-referral into Interwellness and has nothing to do with the family doctor.
Oh, so they...
Usually for cases like that, if someone thinks that they... have gender dysphoria,
right.
The first step would be to send them to a psychiatrist anyway. So that's also not part of a list of things I need to discuss or talk about.
Okay. All right. You know, someone said to me recently, because I've been chatting about this issue, this question with a bunch of different people, some doctor friends and the like. And someone said to me, you know, it's amazing how many people who have religious beliefs or faith are against medical aid in dying, but for the death penalty.
That's
your take on that?
That's a very strange phenomenon. I, you know what was very interesting is that I worked in a very, let's say, liberal clinic in Montreal.
A liberal clinic in Montreal?
What?
No.
I worked at an STD center, the sexual assault center, and I did home care.
Okay.
And so we were a group of people, very pluralistic, very different in our worldview. And I would say that people were always surprised. Like, I'm not Republican just because I'm Christian. And
yeah.
I think that the discussions in the States, which become very polarized politically, can be very confusing. Like that, I think Christians, I'm not saying... Christians who are for, what were you saying, for capital punishment?
Yeah.
I'm not saying, I don't want to make a judgment on my brothers and sisters in the faith, but
I will.
In general, I would not like capital punishment, like guns. Okay, I'm like killing half of your viewership, I'm sure. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, guys. But, you know, those things are not things that I stand for.
Right.
Things that I think are incompatible with, like, a death penalty, for example, for true protection of the community, if you had nowhere to put them, to rehabilitate them, maybe in tribal areas, I would understand. But really, on Earth, I see us as ministers of mercy. And
I like that.
As a doctor, that's all I do. I'm trying to be just in every encounter, but I'm never judging my patients.
Minister of mercy. I'm going to stick with that. I could see James Brown singing a song that. I'm a minister of mercy. Yeah.
I still prefer Dr. Weirdo.
Or Dr. Weirdo, yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Weirdo. My kids used to call me Weirdo. There you go. It's my title.
So
my grave, Weirdo.
Dr. Ramona Coelho, you are a member of the Christian Medical and Dental Society. Is that right?
I'm
or
not
the other one.
I'm part of the coalition. Yes.
Right, the coalition.
I mean, I definitely support CMDS, but
the
I ran into the coalition by accident. I was meeting with different MPPs, and they were like, you know, there's this guy named Larry who knows everything, and he's very reasonable. You should meet him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Obviously, they weren't talking about Larry the Cable Guy.
Or my other brother named Larry.
Or my other brother.
I'm talking about liberals and conservatives and NDP.
Yeah.
Everybody I met with pushed me to meet Larry, and I'm very happy I did.
Let me finish the doctor barrage with this last thing. You know, when it comes to the medical aid in dying conversation, that people will say things like, we treat our dogs better. When our dogs are suffering, we see their suffering and we want to relieve their suffering, and so we put them down. What is the pushback on that?
Well, I could go on for a long time about that. Like, so how to be succinct? I think the first thing to think about is that, first of all, we're not dogs. But second of all, is even just like, okay, pragmatic things. Pretend you don't want to respect my religious beliefs. You don't believe in the Hippocratic Oath, all of this. There's two things. One is pragmatic reasons. When doing home care, it would take me months to uncover cases of financial abuse, of elder abuse. We're saying that people who a request made need to have be connected within 10 days. We have only 15% of the population having access to palliative care. So you can imagine someone who is not receiving that excellent care of their symptoms or helping them walk through their existential crises, but being offered medical aid in dying. And in my mind, that's abuse. It's a sign that we're not willing to journey with this person, but, yeah. You know, medical aid in dying is cheap, it's easy, it's fast, it's accessible, let's do it. But in my mind, it's an abandonment of a person who can have an opportunity to have their days, if they are well controlled, to be pain-free, and to really kind of deal with, like, last things, like closure in the family, living for, like, meaningful events in the family, and still trying to enjoy the little things that each day brings that they have. The other thing I want to say, though, just to quickly address that, about, you know, we treat our dogs better, why shouldn't doctors do this, is that conscience is really the heart of being a good doctor. When you asked me at the beginning, like, why do I do this, and I told you it's my mission, it's because every medical decision I do, even if I don't give antibiotics for someone who has a cold, or I refuse to give a woman who's anorexic water pills because she wants to lose weight, all of those things are morally charged decisions. And if we abandon that kind of thinking with death, I think it's very, very dangerous for our patients.
Man. This is just giving me more questions. This is not resolving anything for me. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, that's sad.
I do want to bring in Tim on this conversation, because Tim, in these medical conversations, usually likes to bring up that his dad was a doctor. And
currently has Parkinson's.
And currently has Parkinson's. And if your dad gets to some kind of a state, and he's he has a Catholic background, does he
Christian,
not?
Christian, yeah, Anglican.
Oh, okay.
Which is Catholic without the Catholic.
Catholic without the catheter?
Yep, yeah, Catholic without... Yeah. That's a different subject.
Right, okay.
No, and there's a couple things going on here. And the irony of medicine is we're making life last longer than ever before, which in a sense kind of, I don't want to say trumps, but definitely kind of puts a different flavor on the Hippocratic Oath, because, you know, 2,000 years ago, you know, even 50 years ago, some of the stuff that people are... medically assisted choosing to end their life early would have ended their life much earlier anyways. And so, yeah. I mean, that I'm not trying to have an answer. I'm not trying to, it's just, it's very difficult. And I know my father, he got his license in 65. And he's been doing the doctor thing for a long, long, long time. And I know for him, the medical assistant dying was a hard thing for him to put his head around as well.
Sure.
And
sure.
Now that he's in that position where, not that he'd ever necessarily consider it, but it's hard because
what do you have? You talked about
we're,
this?
We're yes.
And?
And I think it's something that he would consider when his life got to a point where my dad was an only child. He's always been very independent. And this Parkinson's thing is killing him emotionally.
It's interesting you brought up the independent thing, because this one doctor I spoke to said that the three patients that that this doctor has worked with, who she has helped them with the ending of life. She didn't push the drugs or anything.
No.
She gave them the direction as to where you can go, blah, blah, blah. She said that all three of them were fiercely independent people. Mm-hmm. So there seems to be a bit of a theme there.
Yeah, and I you know, it's hard because you're a doctor and he's a doctor. Preserving life is your mission, as you said. But
if you're agents of mercy,
yeah,
isn't that
is that the other side of the coin as well? And the reality is well, how can I make a decision for you?
Okay.
But the
problem here is that what's happening is that the College of Physicians and Surgeons is making a decision for Ramona.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the problem, the other thing is that, what about the vulnerable? I've worked with the homeless.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I know, but you say absolutely. But the problem is you cannot devise a system. You trust me, you cannot devise a legal system that might allow your father to do it, and that would also protect the homeless person, the person with psychiatric illness, the person with a disability, because those folks, and I've worked with them, they're walking around all the time.
Oh, yeah, we slip into eugenics. I get it.
Absolutely. So it's like, I think the other point that Ramona made is that we do not provide sufficient palliative care.
That's a bigger point as far as I'm concerned.
Because I've already heard from our doctors that there are policies being drafted in hospitals in BC where it's going to be required that the doctor advise the patient that they are eligible for MAID. So that means Drew goes in, he finds out that he's got cancer. One of the things the doctor has to tell him is, Drew, you're eligible for MAID. I'm required by my hospital to advise you of that. We've also heard stories about in
emergency. Is that bad?
What?
Is that bad?
Well,
all you're doing is saying to the patient, by the way, the country that you're living in, the province that you're living in,
has now said that now that you have this diagnosis, you are able to do this, 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 and this.
Well, okay,
can I say something for a second? Yeah, go ahead.
Can I just interrupt for a second? So, Tim, I hear what you're saying. I'm sorry for your father. I think that the struggles with loss of autonomy are difficult. And I think, though, they can be a growing phase for the person if they choose to accept it. And you're talking about freedom, and I'm not trying to obstruct people from making their own decisions. I'm not just not participating with them because my decision is that it's not good for them. But what Larry was trying to say is that if you look at studies in Europe, in Oregon, in Washington, D.C., about why people actually want MAID, it's because they're terrified. And usually it's not actually when they're sicker. It's when they're worried that they're going to be sicker. And most, like for example, in Oregon, where you don't have, you get a script and go home. Most people never use that script. It's because of fear. And in Canada, it's mostly a lethal injection. There's no turning back from that. And if people are told right away when they have cancer, I don't know if you guys have ever seen, but my patients are hysterical, right? They're not even listening to what I'm saying, mm-hmm. and they're thinking about like, it sounds morbid, but some of them are just thinking about. They want to die right now because they're scared of that journey ahead of them.
Yeah. So it might not be the best time to bring up the whole MAID thing.
No, and I mean,
probably
once
the worst time.
Worst time,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, Larry?
People don't understand the dynamic between a doctor-patient and the doctor-patient relationship. There's tremendous vulnerability there. The doctor walks in and says, Drew, you've got cancer, and I just want to tell you that you have the option of MAID.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't the suggestion that this is going to be so terrible and so upsetting that mm-hmm. I really should end my life?
Yeah.
But is it done that way? Like,
it's probably not done as course as that.
But what I'm telling you is that the policies are already out there. This is moving by leaps and bounds in Canada, much faster than any other country. Mm. And the reason Ramona's at risk is because some wise person in government has decided to implement this right into our healthcare system. Nowhere else in the world does this happen.
Trust me, I'm a teacher. I know that people are making decisions for my profession that know nothing about my profession. So I fully support you on that.
Absolutely.
And I guess my pushback is, you know, I don't want eugenics. I don't want people having their lives removed that shouldn't. I don't want the mafia going, it was a mercy killing. That's what it was. You know, but I also don't want you to take my father's right away.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay, Ramona, give me a minute here. Ramona, give me a minute.
Be quiet.
I got to respond to this. I had personal conversation with the executive director of Canada's leading advocacy organization, and she admitted to me that there would be wrongful deaths as a result of legalization.
Absolutely.
Okay. So what we're after here is that there may be a case like your dad, right? But the problem is that we have to realize that this is a society, it's an organic community, and we have to do what's in the interest of the common good in order to protect people from being wrongly killed.
Euthanized. Yep. Absolutely.
I mean,
okay, Ramona?
What I was just trying to say, Tim, is that...
sorry, Ramona.
It's okay. No, I'm sorry.
It's like four Canadians having a conversation.
I'm not sorry. I'm glad I stirred up this hornet's nest.
What I was trying to say to poor Tim there and your father is that I'm not trying to take away your freedom or your autonomy. And it is decriminalized. But when it was decriminalized in the Carter case, it was very clear that all participation from other people should be voluntary, meaning I should not be forced to participate. And there's no
except
need
the doctors.
To force me. No, including doctors were not.
You just said not forced to participate, right? That's when it was.
Yeah.
So if you're not forced to participate.
So the actual court case, the criminal case, the decriminalization of euthanasia, the Supreme Court case,
yeah.
was very clear that it was supposed to be only voluntary participation from anybody involved in the process.
Right.
We're talking about killing, right?
So the way Ontario has taken care of things is going against what the Supreme Court case is.
No, not exactly.
Now we're getting legal. Larry?
Yeah,
Larry, the legal guy.
Okay. What the Supreme Court said was that it was definitely a matter of conscience whether or not someone would participate. They made it clear that you would not have to actually kill someone, mm-hmm. but they didn't rule on the issue of referral. And so the Ontario College has gone out and said, you must refer. Mm. The problem is we have the Catholic Church, the Evangelical Fellowship of Canada, Orthodox Jews, and people of other faiths, and people with no faith specific, are unable to refer. So mm-hmm. refer for us means participation. And that's where the gray area is, and that's why we've gone to court.
Yeah, it's weird. I think that's something that you guys, kind of all tweak on, and maybe the outsiders, none of us have had to refer someone to, you know, go find stuff that's going to end your life, so we don't know what it feels like. But when we hear that, we kind of go, all you're doing is saying, okay, go down to 286 John Street, and they'll take care of you.
Okay, the thing is, Ramona already said she's okay with giving people information.
Right.
That's not what the college wants.
So they want...
They want her to call the doctor who's going to do the assessment, set up an appointment...
Oh, okay.
...and provide like a referral note
yeah.
to this particular doctor.
And so that's a little more hands-on than your conscious
more.
Feels.
And part of the problem is this word referral, because that's really tough for us. Like, we're prepared to provide the information.
Yeah.
Like she said, we're not going to block anybody. But what the college wants is they want more than that.
Right.
They want the actual hands-on, call the other doctor, yeah. set up the appointment. And we're saying we can't do that because, number one, we feel it's immoral. Number two, we don't feel it's good for our patients.
Yeah.
So to force someone like Ramona to do something that's against her faith and not good for her patients is completely abrogating her whole reason for
so
being in medical practice.
If it's just you need to talk to this person, it would be okay for you, but if there's a more...
Yeah, are you okay with it?
If you say, I'm not going to have anything to do with this, Dr. So-and-so, they can take care of it.
What,
if it's just that simple, it's kind of okay,
what,
but
what,
if it
what,
goes...
What Ramona can do, and all of our applicants will do, is they will tell the patient to call telehealth. Telehealth has a special service,
right.
despite what your friend said.
Yeah.
They have a special service. You call telehealth. You say you're interested in assisted suicide.
Yeah.
they will do some questions to make sure you're not suicidal or immediately suicidal.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they will give you a warm transfer to a trained nurse.
What does that mean, a warm transfer? Like a
they
cuddle?
Will basically,
a hug?
They will basically say, just give me a minute and I'll connect you. And they'll connect you with a nurse who can ask you the questions,
oh, okay.
who can then arrange an assessment. So,
okay.
so there is a method, an approach, but okay. that's not good enough for the college. So that's a problem.
I'm still hyper-focusing on the phrase warm transfer. I want a warm transfer.
Okay, is that another name for a BM?
It's a warm transfer to a cold death.
Yeah, that's right. We are speaking with a couple of people that have a heck of a good grasp of this question. Are doctors really being forced to perform duties that go against their beliefs? And when you hear that, you think, you're forcing me to put a needle in someone's arm and end their life? No. Then what are they being forced to do? We've just had a discussion about the fact that the Ontario College of Physicians and Surgeons has mandated that all their doctors, and that's the governing body, you can't say no to them, otherwise you're not practicing anymore.
You lose your job.
They have said, okay, if someone says to you, they come to you and say, we want birth control, we want an abortion, we want to do a sex change operation, or we want to do a physician assisted, whatever the term is, you want to kill yourself, then the doctor can't just say, go see Buddy down the street. The doctor has to say, okay, let me get on the phone and I'll connect you with so-and-so and we'll have a conversation about this, and we'll, you know, so there's a little more involvement that the College of Physicians and Surgeons is making the doctors do. And on the line with us is Dr. Ramona Coelho, and she is one of those doctors that is sort of saying, not sort of, she is saying, whoa, hold on, I'm not comfortable with this. And Larry Worthen is the Executive Director of Christian Medical and Dental Society. That's who we've been chatting. By the way, their website is CMDS Canada, cmdscanada.org. And Dr. Ramona's website is drweird.org. You knew that was coming.
Legal Larry and Dr. Weirdo.
Yeah. Legal Larry and Dr. Weirdo. We got a new segment we could do here from now on.
Anytime, good. Drew. We're happy to come in.
So you happen to be here in Ontario. You're from New Brunswick.
Nova Scotia.
I always get those confused.
Why?
Are you sick of Ontarians being like that? But you're here in Ontario in Guelph at some conference or something? What's happening?
What we do is we invite all of our student leaders from all across Canada. We have a huge program in 14 medical schools across Canada. We're inviting all our student leaders in for 2 days of leadership training.
Wow. And how's it going?
It's going great. I mean, this is one thing about my job I really enjoy, being there with the young people. They're so enthusiastic and so much hope for the future. It's really positive.
Okay. I just want to make a mention here. Rachel, one of our interns, just suggested that we have a comment from one of our Facebook Live streaming video people. We're going to give a little wave to everyone watching on Facebook Live. Thank you. This is from Sean. Sean says, you may have covered this earlier. I just joined the broadcast. The Bible doesn't have anything negative to say about those who have taken their own life in extreme situations. Samson, the guy who fell on his sword. Why is there a W in that word? When eminent, so be it. P.S. I'm not pro-death penalty, yet okay with assisted dying when it's time due to extreme suffering and or death is looming. I'm neither advocating a Logan's Run society. Man, remember that? Holy cow.
31 years old.
But I can also understand those suffering with severe mental health issues that can't be treated. Having dealt with severe depression myself, if I had to live a lifetime with it and accompanying anxiety, I couldn't do it. Thankfully, I received quality treatment and am well-ish, well to well-ish. Do you have any comment on that, Dr. Ramona?
Oh, I have a few thoughts about that, and feel free to interrupt me if I'm
okay,
talking
well.
Too much. Okay, great. For this gentleman, I'm glad that he's better now. I do have patients that I accompany with mental health issues, severe ones that require hospitalizations at times. At times, they're suicidal. And usually, we, as a society up till now, have protected these people, right? And we still do. Everybody knows, I think, I don't know if you guys know personally, but the devastation of losing somebody to suicide. Mm-hmm. And we know the problem in the North of this kind of spreading of despair among our youth and what that means for a whole community when someone takes their life. It's very different if, like, strategy, military, other circumstances. I'm not even going to get into that. But what we're talking about is not even suicide. We're talking about assisted suicide, meaning that I kill you for you. And I'm saying that I'm not comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. I do think that people have... I don't know if for this gentleman who wrote this note, if you've ever read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. This is a man who was a great neuropsychiatrist, had the opportunity to go to America and further his career, but he stayed with his Jewish parents because he knew what was happening and that likely they would end up in some sort of camp. I mean, he didn't know they would end up in Auschwitz. So he stayed behind, gave up his career in America, and he ended up in Auschwitz, and in 9 days after that experience, he wrote Man's Search for Meaning. And he's talking about, from a very Judeo, and I would say Christian perspective, that people do better, and our communities do better, if we embrace life as a gift. With whatever limitations that come that day, if our attitude can be one of hope, then we can, and of meaning that we still see the value of our own lives, no matter what happens to us, that we all do better. And he was talking about what happened to those prisoners. So I recommend that book for this gentleman who's asking that question about why we should probably try as a community to cling on to hope, why it's better for us as a community. That book would be a good answer, I think, to that question.
Okay, let me just wrap up this conversation. By the way, we've got to move on. It's just the fact of radio. Obviously, this could be like an entire show. Oh, yeah. Lots to chat about. First, I want to say to Larry Worthen, Executive Director of Christian Medical and Dental Society, what do you specifically want our listeners to know and do?
I'd like them to go to the Canadians for Conscience website, www.canadiansforconscience.ca. If they can go to the website. If they're in Ontario, we currently have a setup there so that they can simply put their names in, send an automatic email. It takes about 2 minutes to Christine Elliott, Minister of Health, to ask her to introduce legislation to ensure that doctors like Dr. Coelho are safe so that she doesn't have to lose her job or go into some other form of medicine just because of her conscience.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let me finish with this. A couple things. First of all, it's going to take someone, like maybe even you, Dr. Ramona Coelho, to disobey, to get into trouble, for this thing to escalate to the point where it needs to be escalated. It's probably what it's going to take, unfortunately. It's like it is with many other things, especially in our passive, Canadian society, right? Unless it's a hockey game, we're not that wound up about much. Especially if it's against the Habs. sorry, Ramona. The other thing I wanted to say was this, that being a hospital chaplain, I've been at the bedside, and growing up, I've grown up in the funeral business. I've been a pastor, and I'm a hospital chaplain, and I've been at the bedside of many who have breathed their last breath. I've been with the families, and I cannot tell you strong enough that there is that is, I think, the most sacred space I've ever encountered. C.S. Lewis talked about how the Celts used to talk about thin places, where the gap between the creator and the created all of a sudden gets really thin, really thin. And the thinnest place I've ever been to or been in, involved with, was at in a hospital room as someone was passing. There is something that us humans cannot really process and figure out until we have been put in those situations where our loved ones are suffering. And to eliminate that, or to just sterilize the pain that that North Americans just are so sucky about, is not ultimately good for our society. Now, having said that, if my daughter was laying in this bed, or my son, and writhing in pain, my goodness, of course, we all understand. I would want them to end their misery. But I just know that objectively, not subjectively, I can't make sense of this subjectively, but objectively, these are moments that are crucial for our narcissistic society, for our numb society. C.S. Lewis said that pain is God's megaphone to a deaf world. So to continue to sterilize death the way we think we want to here in North America, I'm not sure that's the way to go. That's all I have to say about that. Dr. Ramona?
Yes?
It sounds like a soap opera character.
Code Blue, Dr. Ramona, Code Blue.
I love it.
I'm leaving with a lot of bad labels, I have to tell you.
Yeah, if you continue to insult my client, Drew, they'll be...
Oh, that's right. That's right. We've got a lawyer on our butt. Larry the Lawyer and Dr. Weirdo, thank you both for coming on to the show. Such a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you. Bye, guys.